Well, what we're going to look at today is the record of David and Goliath. As you saw, David skipped over that part. But that one really exemplifies, I think, qualities of Jesus Christ. That's why I wanted to look at it. So we're going to go to 1 Samuel 17. And at this time, David is about 16 or 17 years old, still a youth. And before this, he had spent time with Saul. When Saul would get this evil spirit on him, then David would play his harp and the evil spirit would go away. Already you see when he was youth that the power that he had with his music, first of all, and just the love that he had in his heart and his tenderness, the evil spirit would just go away. And so prior to this time, Saul is actually healed. So he sends David home. So David goes back to tending the sheep. So we pick up the story in chapter 17, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shoco, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoco and Azekah in Ephes-Damina. In other words, that place that they're talking about, it's about 3 hours southwest of Jerusalem. So it's in the wilderness of Judah. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them. That's why they call it the Valley of Elah. The one army got on one mountain, and the other army got on the other mountain, and this valley was in the middle of them. When it says they set the battle in array, means they lined up, you know, across from each other. So in case those Philistines went down in that valley, then this Israel could come, that part of the army could go attack them. So they lined up, you know, against each other. So verse 4, and there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines, named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now the interesting word in here is not Goliath's name so much, because that just means some blender or power or something like that. But the interesting word in this verse is champion, because they call him a champion. It literally means a man of the space between, or a middleman, or a mediator. They chose Goliath to be the mediator, to represent the Philistines. And that if he won the battle, that would mean that all the Philistines. Do you see the parallel with Jesus Christ? How he was a mediator? Oh, keep your finger here and just go over to 1 Timothy chapter 2. What Jesus Christ accomplished for us in defeating the enemy, our big enemy, the devil, right? He did it as representing all of mankind, right? So that's why he's called a mediator. 1 Timothy 2:5, probably a familiar verse. For there is one God and one what? Mediator between God and men, the man, Christ Jesus, who gave himself a ransom for all to be testified in due time. He gave himself as a payment for all. When he died, he gave his life as a payment for every human. That's why he's the mediator. He stands in representation of all of humans. So what? Back to 1 Samuel. So what Goliath was doing was he went out. He was a... It says his height was 6 cubits and a span. Depending on how long you make a cubit, some people have it about 18 inches, or it could be up to, could have been anywhere from 9.5 feet tall to 11 feet. That's tall. I think that I read there was a statistics that the tallest man in the United States that's sorted about is at 8. Someone's 7 feet tall. Yes, they're already going. And they're knocking their heads on the ceiling practically, right? If he was 9.5 feet tall, he would not even fit in this living room. Well, let's go on and read what he had on him here, his armor, verse 5. He had a helmet of brass on his upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. That's the covering over his body, back and front, it came down over his knees, was over 250 of brass. You know, we get those pictures you see of the knights, you know, wearing the heavy armor. You wonder, like, they could even walk with that stuff on, right? But it certainly wasn't 250 pounds worth. Then he really couldn't walk. Verse 6, and he had greaves of brass upon his legs. Those are the covering over your shins. So the greaves come up to the knee and the mail comes down over the knee. And a target of brass between his shoulders. That's like a small shield or that he would keep on his back. And the staff, this is really staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. One bearing a shield went before him. That just the head of the spear was weighed about 17 pounds. Iron. Iron. And that wasn't the whole shield. So the whole spear. And the shaft of the spear was like a weaver's beam would be. Like the ends must have been huge. You know, just the incredible strength that it would take to field that those kind of weapons. Well, this is the comment. Let's keep going and read on. He stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, you have to make it sound like he's bellowing this out, right? Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine and you servants to Saul? Choose you a man for me and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. You send out a mediator from Israel and fight with me, but I defy you. This day is what he's saying. I defy the armies of Israel. Okay. And when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed, greatly afraid. They were shaking in their boots about this whole thing because the guy was so tall and the armor was so strong that he had, and they just had no idea who could possibly fight. Now, you don't see Saul volunteering, do you? If Saul really had trusted God as being the leader of his people, right? And if he had had the anointing of the Spirit on him still at this point, then he could have fought Goliath himself. But he's afraid like all the rest of the people. So you see that without the Spirit, you could go kowtowing to the fear. Okay, so now David. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. And Jesse had 8 sons. And the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. So Jesse was old. David was the youngest son. He had already been anointed by this time. Remember when Samuel came and anointed him and Jesse brings out all his sons from the oldest down to Bevan that were at home at that time. And Samuel goes, no, not him. No, it's not him. No, it's not him. And don't you have any more sons? You know. So, oh yeah, we got David. He's out with the sheep, the lad, you know. We'll bring him. And that's who Samuel. At that point, remember, he says, man looks on the heart. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. So even when David was, God saw his heart. Great. Really great. So, but the 3 oldest sons, verse 13, of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. That's referring to how he had been with Saul, played the lute or the harp for him. Now he had come back to Bethlehem and he was safe again. So he doesn't really know about what's going on with this war until he gets there. So it's we got to keep reading. Verse 16. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself for how many days? 40 days. 40 is a good, interesting verb. What other thing happened for 40 days?
Tempted of the devil.
He was tempted, Jesus Christ was tempted in the wilderness for 40 days. What other 40 is there? Moses fasted for 40 days.
Children of Israel wandered in the wilderness for 40 years.
The children of Israel wandered for 40 years, right? 40 represents a time of testing or trial. And it's interesting that this Philistine, Goliath, came out every day for 40 days to say the same thing. I defy the armies of Israel. So now we got to go on. Verse 17. Jesse said to David, his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Means he wanted a report back, or some proof that they were still alive. 19. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. David rose up early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took and went, as Jesse had commanded him, came to the trench, as the host was going forth to the fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. So every day they would get their army in battle formation, but then this Philistine would come out and start his ranting and challenging to them, and then they would all go away because they didn't have anybody to fight for them. Verse 22, and David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, mediator, the middleman, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. The men of Israel said, have you seen this man that's come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. Even with all that motivation, nobody was volunteering. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? So all the people are running away and shaking in their boots and talking about their fear and how they didn't want to volunteer, and what were we going to do, and how horrible is this situation, and look at what a dreadful pickle we're in. David goes, who's going to take care of this? This is a reproach against Israel. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? In David's heart, God was not a dead God. You know, he was not just like the idols of all the other nations. God, a real God, God who was right there, was part of life. He turned around. And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. Now you notice that David's questions are not about what are the rewards. They're about, this man is defying God. You need to stand up for that. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to do something. Because he's talking about our living God here. That was the same thing that Jesus Christ did so many times. He just stood up for his Father and just said, my Father is a God of love. You know, Father will take care of you. My God is a God of healing. I mean, he never let anybody talk badly about God as his Father. Now, this is what's really interesting. Brother, 28. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride, and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou might see the battle." Talking to his younger, he's the oldest, right? He's talking to his youngest brother, really snottily, you know, with a lot of criticism, and implying that David had come there of his own accord, knowing he would not have done it. David would not have done anything Father had not directed him to do it. So the first criticism that Eliab has is about, why did you come down here? And if you think about all the things that happened to Jesus Christ, it's representative in the type of how Jesus' brethren, Israel, majority of people rejected him. They said, like, who are you? Why'd you come here? What's your problem? What are you doing? Why are you talking like that? Oh, you know, what you're saying is stupid. You know, those kinds of attitude, the criticism, and all Jesus Christ ever said in response is, I came here because my father told me to do it, so I'm here. And Eliab accuses him of having pride, right? Did David have pride? No, he's the one who, he's the only one out of all these people that is standing up for true God. So David says this. Now David could have, you know, tried to, defend himself, right? But you're not right, that's not right. And he could have, you know, tried to talk back to his older brother. But they had a lot of respect in the families for the eldest of the family, the father. He wouldn't have said anything bad to his brother. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? In other words, I'm not going to try to defend it. Just, you know, I haven't done anything. But he turns away, and he turned from him toward another. And he spoke after the same manner. But did he stop speaking about who's defying, who's going to take away the reproach from Israel? Who's going to stand for the living God? Did he stop saying that? Just because his brother was criticizing him, telling him that he had pride? No, he didn't stop. And the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and Saul sent for him. So he was talking about it enough that enough people in the camp heard that they said, well, we gotta send this guy to Saul. You know, maybe he'll have some ideas. So David goes to Saul. But you see how he was mocked by his brother? And that's exactly what happened with Jesus Christ too, all through the time. Those who were the leaders, who should have been the ones that people were looking up to, the Pharisees, the scribes, they were the ones who were always put out because Jesus Christ was standing for God as his father and telling the truth about, you know what the law says is, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength. And they're going, yeah, right. But what about washing your hands 15 times before you eat? You know? What about, he would go and Jesus Christ healed somebody on the Sabbath, and they said, you know, but you broke the Sabbath. Just all those things. See, the mocking and the criticism of his own brethren. So, now we go, verse 32. David is in front of Saul. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him, because of Goliath. Thy servant will go and fight this Philistine. So he volunteers to be the mediator. Volunteers. Saul didn't ask him, right? He didn't even say anything about it. David just goes straight to Saul and says, I will stand. I'll go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go up against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth, what David says. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. Then there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose, the lion or the bear, one of them, he arose against me. I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. The servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Remember last time we were talking all about the shepherds and how David was a shepherd. And so he learned how to care for his sheep and to, he loved those sheep. And so he was the good shepherd, you know, he was the one who didn't run away, but faced straight into the lion and the bear. One of the things that he carried with him as a shepherd was the club. Remember? The club was this big, long piece of wood that has spikes in the ball of it, and he would carry that. So he had this slingshot and his club and his staff, and when the lion came and it tried to snatch a sheep, he went right up there and clobbered it and took the sheep out of his mouth. Whatever God told him to do, God obviously told him what to do to defeat the lion and the bear. But it really hard again, too, about how he was not afraid. It was his responsibility to take care of the sheep, though he took it very personally and just said, all right, well, if God, you'll have to show me how to do it. And he's a youth, remember? He's less than 17 years old. And when this lion and bear incident happened, he was probably a lot younger. So that's really amazing. But he's comparing now Goliath, just like this lion and this bear, because he came in and he defied the armies of the living God. That's why he's going to get defeated, because he stood up against God's people. And when you do that, you're messing with God here. Okay? And David said, and moreover, the Lord hath that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. He will deliver me. God will deliver me. That's, you know, just like David is the type of Christ, it's also, he's also an example to us as believers who have Christ in us, right? And whenever we get confronted with Goliath in our life, this is what we need to say. We need to say, God will deliver me. And who, what is this anyway? This is a direct attack against the living God, and I'm his representative, and I have Christ in me. So, all right, here we go. We're going to stand. See? So we can do the exact same thing. God will deliver me. And now we have to read about how the battle. This is the most exciting part. Are you enjoying this? I love this story. Verse 38, and Saul armed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of brass upon his head, and also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go. He tried to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, can I go with these, for I have not proved them? And David put them off him. But he tried to put on Saul's armor that he gave him. Right, he tried to put on the helmet, he tried to put on the coat of mail, and take the spear and the sword, and realized, right after he put them on, he realized, these weapons are not going to work for me. These are the weapons of the world. How it's always supposed to be done. You can't go to battle unless you have a helmet and greaves and a coat of mail and a shield and a spear and a sword. Right? But as soon as he put them on, he realized that those weapons were just, they were carnal. Remember that verse? What's that verse about? The weapons of our warfare are not carnal. Yeah, 2 Corinthians, right? Let's look at it. So just like David's weapons were not things of the world, so Christ's weapons were not things of the world either. What were his weapons? They were spiritual weapons. Be healed. Eyes be opened. You know, taking mud out of the ground and putting it on somebody's eyes, say, Those are not the common things of the world, right? They were just ordinary things, but they were spiritual things. 2 Corinthians 10:4. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. I want to read you another, really, Zechariah. Zechariah 4, verse 6. It says, Then he answered, this is in, spake unto me, saying, This is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was the king. Saying, Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Now remember when you read Lord of hosts, what is Lord of hosts? That's one of the Jehovah names. So what does it mean? Lord of hosts? Yahweh Sabaoth. Do you remember? When you say Lord of hosts? Oh, okay. Well, the Lord of hosts is where it's God's call to battle. You know, when he sets up the standard in the middle and he calls all the mighty men and captains to come to the battle, he's called the Lord of hosts. The Lord who controls all the hosts, right? Well, Jehovah controls all the heavenly hosts, right? And he also, you know, works with the earthly armies too. But every time you read Lord of Hosts, it has to do with battle, the call to war. Okay? So, but not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. See, it's going to be a spiritual victory here because there's only... by way of the Spirit that he could win, that David could win, being a youth and not even having any armor, right? Hey, back to 1 Samuel. And that's really how Jesus Christ walked too, was he so walked with the wisdom of the Spirit. And he did not look at the five senses of what things looked like. Now, there was a boy that was lying on the ground foaming, you know, and the father was telling the disciples, how come you couldn't heal him? What's the matter with you? And Jesus Christ says, turns it right back on the father and said, but if you have faith, then he will be healed. And as soon as the father understood that and realized it, then the child got healed. So many times in healing, there is a pointed by the Spirit answer that really cuts through all of the things that are... Okay, verse 40. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag which he had, even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Now they have an interesting conversation. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David. And the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with staves, with sticks? He was carrying a staff, right? And he had his club. Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Good. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Now, that phrase right there about, I'll give your flesh to the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field, that was kind of a taunt or, you know, in a battle, whoever won, the victor, that's what they would say, is that there's the spoils would go to the vultures, you know, they would eat the ones who had been defeated, right? Well, in the last great battle, when Jesus Christ comes back, gathered it, all of the captains and mighty men of the earth get killed, and God calls all the vultures of the earth to gather together to eat the spoils. In the battle, in the last battle at Armageddon, the vultures are there too. And that's basically what Satan thought, too, in the last battle, was that he was going to win. In many respects, Goliath represents the Antichrist. He's an Antichrist type of figure, he has the a similar kind of thing that the adversary was trying to do by having the Philistines, Israel, and have control over all of that whole area. And so, yeah. So the carcass thing is that at the last battle, Satan and all his forces are gathered all around Jerusalem and they're attacking it and defeat it. And they think that they've won. But then Christ comes back with his hosts, with the heavenly army behind him, see, and defeats him. And what ends up eating all the flesh, the vultures end up eating the flesh of all of Satan's. But I love, this is the greatest verse in this whole passage. Verse 47. We didn't read 46, did I? This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee. And oh, we didn't read 45. I'm so sorry. Okay, this is so great. I'm just really excited, and I'm skipping ahead. Okay, 45. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the Lord who calls battle, the Lord who fights the wars, the Lord who has charge of all the heavenly hosts, at any time he can call on them and send them to do whatever they need to do. Right? I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee. And I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that's kind of a wimpy way to say it, that there is a God in Israel. It should say that Israel has a God. A God meaning the mighty one, the El, the mighty God. That Israel has a mighty God. Not just that there's a God in Israel. Philistines, not really that great, right? But know that Israel has the mighty God, the mightiest God. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our... Remember a long time ago I played that song one time that sang about the battle is the Lord's? The heavenly armor we enter the land. Like Jesus Christ fought with spiritual weapons, we fight with spiritual weapons, conquer in battle. We are conquerors because the battle is the Lord's, and he will give it into us. So, okay, 48. Came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sunk into his, fell upon his face to the... Before the Philistine could even do anything, David had put the stone in his sling, and it was so accurate that it went right through his eyes. I know there's been some teachings, and I don't even remember when it was or why, that now it couldn't have been his forehead because his helmet was covering his forehead. His helmet would have come down over his forehead, right? But it couldn't be his knees either because, as I was describing, the greaves come up over the knees and the coat of mail comes down over that. The only thing, really, that was showing that was unprotected were his eyes. And that's what the rabbis in the Talmud, they say that the forehead in this case means the house of his eyes. So the stone went directly into his eyes, straight into his brain. There was so much velocity on the stone that it went right into his brain. Because it says here, well, he fell upon his face to the earth. But so David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. Killed him, in other words, but there was no sword in the hand. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. But I mean, it kind of looks like, well, what would, you know, the stone just knocked him out, and then you know, he had to run and take his sword and chop off his head real fast. He literally killed Goliath with that stone. That's why you know it was super velocity, a miracle, you know. And the fact that it was so accurate, like either right between his eyes or in his eyes, that was the only thing showing. If it had just been his forehead, even that, you could get knocked out, but you wouldn't get killed necessarily. Whatever it was went straight into his brain. No, went straight. That's really wild. That is so great. And I love it how it says here, there was no sword in the hand of David. There was no physical sword. It didn't take a physical sword. And the other thing that the rabbi said is that the forehead or that place right here, it's the forehead or the part right above your eyes, that's the place of a person's pride. So that was the other thing, was that it hit Goliath right at the place that he thought he was invincible, one place where he was. It didn't matter how tall he was, it didn't matter how much the armor weighed, it didn't matter that his spear was so big. He couldn't even get off the spear enough to throw it. He didn't do anything. And David killed him, just like that. We gotta go ahead and read the rest. 52. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. They pursued them all the way back to the coast where their cities were, Ekron and Gath. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Shaarim, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his head. And there's one other thing I wanted to tell you about how he used Goliath's sword to cut off his head, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in the type, this is how, now, Jesus died on a cross, right? And when Satan put him on that cross to kill him, he thought he won, right? So by Satan's own instrument, it defeated death. He thought that he was going to kill Jesus Christ, but instead the cross becomes the way of salvation for everybody to have life instead. Mm-hmm. And so Satan's own weapon was used against him. Cut off his head. Is that cool? His own... Okay, so we have to read Hebrews chapter 2. Let's see. The death of the cross ends up giving life to all. Hebrews 2:14. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. And that's exactly what David did when he defeated Goliath, too. They were all afraid, right? Mm-hmm. And they were in bondage to this situation. And because he slew Goliath, because David slew Goliath, they released the people so that they... One more, Colossians 2:14. Better read 14. It says, blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross. He took the law of ordinances that was against us, all our sins, all the list of things we've ever done wrong, and nailed it to his cross. And having spoiled principalities and powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. And when David comes back from the battle with the Philistine, they do a big parade, just like that, just like the victory procession that it talks about in 2 Corinthians 2, always triumph in Christ. There's a victory procession because you're showing the spoils openly. You know? And he put the head of Goliath in Jerusalem so everybody could see that he did it. And so all the women and the people and everybody came out and were singing and dancing and rejoicing over what David had done and how David had ended us, all because he just relied on spiritual weapons. Exactly what the truth. God will deliver me. That's what we can say to God. So God bless you.